Thanks for listening to the Scottish Housing Podcast. You can find out more about the presenters by going to scottishhousingpod.com, and you can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok and Facebook. Just look up at Scottish Housing Pod.
The Scottish Housing Podcast is brought to you in partnership with Indigo Square, 2010 Consultancy, and the Wright Business Centre.
Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of the Scottish Housing Podcast. I'm Ryan Gilmore.
And I'm Stephen Purcell.
So it's another podcast about housing in Scotland, but we don't want it to be just a housing podcast. We want this to be a wee bit different. So we are going to do things a bit differently. It's not just going to be a podcast. There's lots of podcasts out there that specialise in being podcasts for property developers and people who want to make money from it, or they specialise in being the podcast of the housing sector, the social housing sector, or industry specific. So what we'll be looking to do is sort of widen that out and try and really cover everything from somebody who's going to give us the history of social housing in Scotland right the way through to a first-time buyer's crash course in how you buy a property.
Yeah, and this is what's going to make it very interesting, and it's not going to be specific to one part of the industry or one element of property or housing. And from my perspective, coming from the background that I do and the interest I have in how housing can be a catalyst for creating wider things like cohesive neighbourhoods and places that it's not just for living but a nice place to work and play and enjoy yourself and to meet other people. And you know, not just driven by the private sector, but the role that affordable housing and that social housing can play in a much more positive way than sometimes is perceived. So I think the good thing is that we're both coming from different perspectives. If you don't know Brian, he's one of these really capitalist landlords. and my background's a wee bit different. But actually, the more we've got to know each other over the years, we've found that despite our different backgrounds and perspective, the kind of things that we want to see happening in Scotland, in particular around housing, are actually very similar.
They are, which I think would be useful then if we introduce ourselves. So as you said, I'm the greedy capitalist private sector side of this podcast. So I'm Ryan Gilmore. I've worked in property. I first worked in property. Was really working in property. It was working in the civil service in 1989-90 at a place called the Registers of Scotland, which is where all heritable property transactions are recorded, books, handwritten ink, and going back centuries, in fact. So, for example, Edinburgh Castle is recorded as being owned by the King. It would have, when I was there, it was being owned by the Queen. So that's how far back and how detailed. So I worked there, deciding that wasn't for me. Went back to university, got my law qualifications, and then went to work in a state agency. So the bulk of my experience thereafter has been in residential property. I worked pretty much 15 years in residential estate agency and in sales. I started in the mid-90s when the market wasn't great and it was an uneven market. Things, you would sell a house for, in those days, a house that would nowadays be about $300,000-$400,000. You'd sell it for $70,000. The next week you'd sell one round the corner for $90,000 and then the next week you'd sell one again for $70,000. It was a really difficult time in the housing market. We'd had that crash in 1992. And again, that's one of the things you just touched on there that I think I want us that we'll be covering in this type of thing is to try and feed into how other things in the economy impact the housing market. In the last 10 years, I've been running my own businesses, did a business where we were working with housing associations, and that was interesting. And it gave me an insight into the challenges that they have. And for people who don't know, much of what people would refer to as council housing these days is actually it's housing associations, not the councils. In fact, Glasgow City Council, who used to be, as you'll know, Stephen, when you introduce yourself, who used to be Britain's largest landlord, or one of Britain's largest landlords, now own nothing. They don't own big residential houses. And of late, I own a Leckington property factoring business. Also, people might recognise me. I'm on Radio Scotland on the Kay Adams programme. I've been doing that for about 6-7 years now. Every second Tuesday, taking people's calls and texts and queries about the property market. And that actually was one of the inspirations for wanting to do this. Because the amount of times I find myself with somebody else a question on there, referencing back to, you know, somebody who's looking to retire, they've paid off their mortgage, they've got equity in their house, what do we do next? The amount of times I'll say, well, this all stems back to May 1979 when Margaret Thatcher won the election and brought in Right to Buy, and you find yourself referencing points like that in the back, or very often I'll find myself referencing the economic crash of 2008 and how that has had a feed-on impact into the housing market. So a lot of what has inspired me to want to do this podcast and make it different is that when you reference those things, it's so that people can go to, we'll have interviewed someone, people can go to and go, I now know what they're talking about when we do the first-time buyer guide. I now know what they're talking about when they say about how the wider economy and inflation has an impact on what a first-time buyer can afford. So that's me. That's my history. Principally prime centre, touched on public sector. So, Stephen, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so Stephen Purcell, and some older listeners may remember that I had, for almost two decades, a significant elected political career in the city of Glasgow, representing the Labour Party, so coming from a centre-left social democrat position, and during that time I also held a number of significant senior posts in both the UK and Scottish Labour Party, so a political animal for two decades across the city of Glasgow, and at the end of that career was the leader of the Labour Group, leader of the City Council, and during that time, very associated with big housing projects and big developments in the city. So housing has been a both in, you know, because we all live in a house, and, you know, we all live in some form of housing neighbourhoods, but then as part of my political career, housing has been a big part of that. We oversaw, you touched on it, during my time, the transfer of all of the city council housing stock to the Glasgow Housing Association, as it was then part of the bigger Wheatley group now. And also, was in office during the catalyst for a whole number of private sector regeneration housing projects. And again, older listeners that know Glasgow well will clearly reflect on how changed a city it has become over the recent decades in terms of the mix of housing, the type of housing, and the demands and the growths of certain sectors, which we'll touch on as these podcasts develop. So housing and these things have been a big part of my past career, and indeed the career I lead and have done for the last 40 years, which is a private sector consultant, advising on housing and on planning, related property and land and public policy issues to a number of private sector in interests in housing in all of the sectors, but also to some in the social and affordable housing sector. So a real mix. So been asked to think about launching this podcast to you, Brian. It just was in terms of my own background, both in my previous career and what I do today as a consultant, was a no-brainer. I'm really quite excited about the issues we'll explore. Whether anybody else will find our musings of interest, it should be another kettle of bananas. But I am.
You talking away there, just give me a question. I know this is supposed to be us doing an introduction to who we are, but just give me a... I remember once when I worked in a state agency, and you touched on it at the beginning, that although I principally private sector, you principally being public sector, as we've known each other through the years, we share mutual desires about housing and understanding about housing, about how housing connects to every part of people's lives. But it reminded me, I remember once speaking to Charles, who wrote for Herald, well-known Irish-born journalist in Scotland, who, I remember once speaking to him about it, and he said, oh, you can, editors will never get housing onto the front pages. It's not a news story that makes people buy games. And I'm just wondering, as a politician, you know that housing matters immensely. It's so important to the social fabric. But at the same time, as a politician, you have to be driven by the news agenda and what makes an impact. And you'll get people to move with you if they themselves are going to get the threat of glory from it. If this journalist, I'll call him Jerry for the purposes, was right, and he shouldn't get, and the housing wasn't then a news story, did you find it difficult to move forward with housing-related stuff when you were at the city? You know, in terms of the other stuff, its agenda override housing-related stuff.
So the news agenda does drive politics, and in many ways, so it should, because what should happen is, the news agenda is a different debate from, not for this podcast, I suppose, but the news agenda should reflect where public opinion is and public interest is, or where public opinion and public interest should be. You know, so the role of the news agenda in holding people to account, for example. So as a politician, yes, you have to be driven by the news agenda and to be relevant so that your customers, your voters or your customers, can understand your relevance, understand your message and hold you to account for what you're saying. You have to be in tune with the news agenda. But what I would say in answer to the question about that, you know, is housing something that gets on the front page? Clearly, it's very topical, and we, again, we'll explore this over our series of podcasts. It's a very topical issue now, and maybe it wasn't at the time of that journalist speaking to you. Nothing more Irish than a pseudonym or a name of Jerry, is there? In terms of Irish origins. But actually, I go back to what I said earlier about my real keen interest in housing as a catalyst for something, for so many wider things, community cohesion, social fabric that you mentioned, the economy and its relationship with the economy, particularly in this country, and the British relationship with housing, which has changed so dramatically in terms of how that relationship balances and ownership and all these issues. Is housing is such an integral part to so much else that you as a politician have to do, is related to jobs, it's related to people's income, it's related to the kind of neighbourhood you live in, the environment, how people feel about themselves. Housing and health is so interconnected that even if housing itself you couldn't get in the front page of the news agenda, actually, when you think about housing, it's central position to all these other agendas. For me, when wanting to pursue housing issues as a politician, it was actually quite easy to get it in the news agenda, even if it didn't appear directly as a housing matter.
So I love statistics, and it's one of the things that we'll probably touch on. I do find when you speak to one of the benefits of knowing statistics, actually, is you can chuck them out and nobody queries. So it's quite a good way of doing it, because you're going to be roughly right, people are shooting. And you mentioning there, one of the things we want to do on the podcast is cut through jargon. So I mentioned I'm a property factor. Well, actually, if you've always lived in a house with a garden, you might not even know what a property factor is. I mean, I remember when I worked at the Register of Scotland back in 1990, a colleague said, I've just bought my first flat. And do you know, I was speaking to everybody in here, Brian, you're from the West Coast, I was speaking to everybody in here, and I was talking about my factor trees. They didn't even know what a factor was. And he walked out of the room, and I thought, what's a factor? So one of the things, for those listening, that's someone who looks after the communal areas of developments and buildings. So one of the things we want to do is try and cut through the jargon so that it's not all technical chat about it. But also we will be given statistics, because I think sometimes the numbers help people in the context. So you mentioned there about it gives you a wider view of the economics. And I always talk about how Scotland was prior to 79, and in the podcast we'll talk about this. Prior to 79, over 60% of people in Scotland lived in socially rented accommodation, and about 30% lived in private owned accommodation. Here we are today in 2024 at roughly 60% live in private owned accommodation. And it's only about 20% who live in socially rented accommodation. And so we'll be talking about how those numbers and why those numbers have gone through and what impact they have on the housing market and things like that. But again, you touched on the communities that housing creates. And so I think it'd be worthwhile, again, talking to the listeners about our backgrounds in housing in terms of what housing we lived in, what housing we know, because it can be about how can you talk to me about living in the top of a high-rise if you've never set foot across the threshold of one. So I think it'd be useful. So Stephen, tell me about your earliest memories of housing and the type of housing that you and your family know and grew up in and things.
So I was born and brought up in Yoker, which essentially, in the time the years I was growing up there, was still a shit building district of Glasgow, and you know, the BAE Systems, as it is now, has still got a Scotstoun yard, which is right in the doorstep of Yoker Yarrows Shipbuilders, as it was when I was growing up. And the reason I mention that is because there's a relation to the housing neighbourhood from which Yoker was, and to an extent is. It's changed dramatically since I grew up in a room and kitchen, where my parents slept in a bed recess in the kitchen, and my brother and I shared the one bedroom in the house.
We need to give some context. You're not 100. This is
a million years ago. No, this is the 70s and the 80s. Uh-huh. Yeah, and in fact, that's the house I stayed in until I chose to move out, because I could when I was 18. I was also in a position to buy my first flat when I was 18, mm-hmm. Sign my first mortgage application on my 18th birthday. I wanted to have my own flat, but we lived in a community that was, what I said earlier about a catalyst for cohesive neighbourhoods. Actually, Yoker was, and the reason it was, there was a mix of tenure of housing. We thought we were posh because my parents owned their own house, lived in a room and kitchen tenement, but they owned it. Across the road was social rented housing and other past neighbourhoods as well, mainly. Over the years, from my child into my teenage years, that housing stock became managed by a local community-based housing association. And I will return to these issues in future podcasts. I put that marker down there because I'm a great champion of community-based housing associations. I think they contribute, like the neighbourhood I grew up in, to a cohesive neighbourhood. Small is beautiful. A theme I will recur to later point. The other reason it was a cohesive neighbourhood was because we'd had a big employer on our doorstep. And as a result of a big employer and a mix of housing and a mix of incomes, people with a mix of backgrounds, with good local shops, you know, local pubs for people to enjoy themselves in, bowling club, other leisure facilities in our neighbourhood. And I'm a great believer, the older I get, that nothing's actually new in life. Yes, the technology we use has got advanced and all of the rest of it, but concepts are nothing new. And today the buzzword around placemaking and community development and 20-minute neighbourhoods, a thing we return to over the podcast without, actually, they're not new. They used to exist. And they still exist, of course, but in the neighbourhood I grew up in, we lived in a 20-minute neighbourhood. You didn't need to leave Yoker really for much. Same about the football, if you weren't content with supporting. As many of you were, fairly Yoker Athletic games, but you win a sort of a bit bigger, or the team you're identifying with in Glasgow, or whatever, family visiting. So your family lived nearby when I grew up as well, and that's something that's changed as well. But hey, we're all being told we should go back to 20-minute neighbourhoods. Well, we're told they're new, but actually, it's the current buzz around future housing development, community development, isn't my view. Take us back to what I grew up in.
It's funny you say that, because I was reading when I saw stuff about 20-minute neighbourhoods, and you're reading it thinking, but this is just a neighbourhood. You've given a buzzword, but it's what I would think of as an old-fashioned neighbourhood.
Yeah, but one of the reasons that 20-minute neighbourhoods are being promoted is because we've all got to think differently about climate change and sustainability. And what 20-minute neighbourhoods do is give an opportunity to create placemaking, another buzzword, areas and neighbourhoods in which people don't have to leave as often, don't have to use the private car and the like. And again, if we're thinking about where housing development is going, something we'll return to as well over the podcasts, I'm often saying to clients I work with in the housing sector and the climate sector, you know, you guys and girls and everybody else involved in it are potentially at the catalyst for the sustainable neighbourhoods. Housing is a central part of how you create a different way of living in a more sustainable way and are the catalyst for the green and blue infrastructure that we need in these neighbourhoods as well. So these are the bits that are different from the 20-minute neighbourhoods of the past, because infrastructure, technology's changed. But it's, you know, I think if it for, although we're going through a difficult economic time, again, something more return to, but it actually is, if you're involved in housing, as a professional capacity, public or private sectors now, for me, I think you're right at the heart of something that's going to be very exciting over the years to come.
I mean, I grew up in a different environment, which again, people listening to this, will be aware of for the history of the bit of local shorts. I grew up in a very suburban area. I was very fortunate. My dad worked really hard. We lived in a nice suburban bit. Giffnock, people who know Glasgow, south side of Glasgow. Nice detached bungalow with gardens, all very suburban. What people would think of, you know, again, 70s, 80s. So if you think of the monkey saw, suburbia, that's pretty much people out cutting the grass on a Sunday, that type of thing. And gives you a certain outlook in life as to the way people are going to live and be very different. My relatives all came from the northwest of England, town called Whitehaven. We used to joke when we used to go down to see them once every couple of months that it was like, obviously Doctor Who was really big at the time. We used to joke it was like going back in time in Doctor Who's TARDIS when we went down to Whitehaven, because that was still a bit of a land that time forgot. It was one of the first places that lost its coal mines in the sort of early 70s. And, I mean, Whitehaven used to be, its claim to fame, it was the only place in Britain attached during the American War of Independence there, because it was the biggest port in the UK at the time, and they hired a French ship which came up and fired shells up to Whitehaven. But the point being, it was a place that, it was one of those first types of places where industry was forgetting. I've got a mate who lives in Hull who often talks about people go down to Yorkshire, to the Yorkshire Dales, and they never just go over the brow of the hill, and Hull can be a bit left behind. Whitehaven, Workington, Maryport on the west coast of Cumbria is a bit like that. People go down to the Lake District and they don't go over the brow of the hill into those sorts of towns. So they were a wee bit different. All my relatives lived in ex-local authority properties, cousins who, you know, they were, you know, miners, terraced cottages. Both my grandparents had outside toilets. One was more outside than the other. The other one was a wee bit outside. One was a wee bit outside, the other was quite a bit outside. And they used to have that greaseproof paper toilet. You would hold it all in the middle of winter because you didn't want to go in the toilet. So it was a very different world. I vaguely remember a house got bulldozed about 76, 77, and she got brand new. One of my cousins, to give you an idea of the time, said one of my cousins, the street they lived in was called Jubilee Close because it was meant for the Silver Jubilee, and it was they were just overwhelmed. My uncle got this brand new house, my gran got this brand new house. There were quite a few at that time. There was still quite a bit of social housing getting built, and they were overwhelmed with the difference in quality between they were living in 100-year-old minor cottages, outside toilets, just cold and damp all the time, and suddenly this brand new housing with inside toilets, fitted kitchens and a running hot water for the bath. You didn't have to have a steel tub in front of the fire. They were just overwhelmed at that transformation. So although I'm looking at it from afar, you still get an idea of how a nice new home can impact on people's self-esteem and their life and things like that. So actually, that's then quite the contrast of what I grew up with in terms of where I was living and where then. You didn't, you're a child, you don't think of it in any great in-depth way, but it does give you an idea of everybody should be of the ability to aspire to live in better housing. And as you say, that can help the cohesion of a community if people are happy with where they live and that type of thing. So that's our background. That's where we are. These are the types of topics that we are going to be talking about. You'll be able to pick this podcast up on all the places where people can get podcasts, hoping to tap into Stephen's fantastic contact book to get some really, really good, useful, influential guests. We'll be talking about what's going on in the news at the time. Might just be Stephen and I just talking about what's going on in the news as well as the guests. So we're hoping that you will find this interesting. The first three guests that we've got lined up, I think, will be really relevant to what's going on in the housing market just now. Hopefully, more and more people will join us, and you might be listening to this, and we've already been running 4 or 5, 10 podcasts or whatever, and you're going back to the start to listen to them. So hopefully, this gives you an insight as to what we are going to be doing. There'll be more along soon. We're hoping to have them out once a week. So this is me, Brian Gilmore.
This is Stephen Purcell,
and we are saying thanks very much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Scottish Housing Podcast with Stephen Purcell and me, Brian Gilmore. To ensure you don't miss an episode, please follow us and subscribe wherever you pick up your podcasts. To find out more about the presenters, go to scottishhousingpod.com, and to get all the latest information about forthcoming guests and new episodes, follow us on social media at Scottish Housing Pod.